This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 13th of June, 2022. Some big time negative energy washing over markets after the Friday developments in which we are seeing twofold on the inflation front. So the key was, of course, at the headline, the CPI release for the U.S. for May, showing the core at 0.6% month on month versus the 0.5% expected. You can annualize that to something pretty high, of course. The year on year was 6%, slightly down from the prior month, but slightly above what was expected. And then on the headline, the month on month was at a full 1.0%. versus 0.7% expected, a very hot inflation level for the month of May. And then the cherry on top here was the inflation expectations, the long-term inflation expectations from the University of Michigan Sentiment Survey, which posted a record, not the inflation expectations, but the sentiment survey itself, posting a record low in the history of the survey. And then on the inflation expectation side, up to 3.3%, a 0.3% jump from what had been capping the range all the way back to 2011, this sort of 3% level for that. And this is one of the inputs into the Fed's inflation expectations gauge, which they use traditionally, supposedly, as in a very important part of their outlook on whether inflationary risks becoming unanchored. So this was taken very seriously by the market, a massive markup of the short end of the rate yield curve, with the Fed being marked much higher in the near future. We'll get more to that in a moment. But a key for equity markets, of course, was that this really spooked risk sentiment. And we just ran away to the downside, you know, smashed down through all of the Fibonacci's all in one go. This morning, we're trading just about the new lows of the cycle, Peter. This looks very, very heavy. And I'm not sure we're going to see a bottom just right here just yet.
No, I'm actually thinking back to our previous discussions on this podcast, both the ones we do every morning, but also the special edition podcast we did in late May, where we talked about John at drawdowns. I mean, it's really coming back to me how dynamic these things are, how prolonged this can be. I of course, based on what I'm seeing now in terms of the data that is coming in, and also this reversal of the rebound. I mean, I think it's reinforcing, at least I'm updating my view and probability that we are in a prolonged, very longer than normal drawdown. This is not going to be a V-shaped recovery, just like Sequoia Capital have told the tech sector. This is going to be a long one. And I mean, look at this morning, you have Turkey credit default swaps hitting all-time high. You have emerging markets that is just absolutely puking. You have this speech from Putin over the weekend as well, I think spooking at least the European market. I mean, they're using the food situation as a leverage point. And he's talking about being Peter the Great and taking back Russian lands. I mean, and you have a suggestion in the Duma to not acknowledge the sovereignty of Lithuania. I mean, it's just, I think this situation is pretty pretty intense here on the continent and around this war in Ukraine with Russia, and Russia's not coming back anytime soon. I mean, I'm just, you can forget all about Russia coming back with supplies of metals and energy and food. We have a big hole to plug here. So you have that, and then you have the yield curve that is inverting. I'll let you talk about that, John. And we have two themes now: travel and 3D printing, as you can see on slide two, going into negative on a 5-year horizon. So and if you look at the 1-year performance, we only have three themes now: commodities, renewable energy, and defense that are up over the past year. The rest is just hanging in a very thin thread here. And then China, I have it on slide three. I think I've had it as sort of one of the scenarios, and I'm beginning to fear that this scenario is going to be the one that plays out, that because of the low vaccination rate in China and unfortunately an inferior vaccine relative to the one we're using in Europe and the US and elsewhere from Pfizer and Moderna, China, unfortunately, I think, will be in a situation where they will move in and out of lockdowns, and it will just cause more stress on the global supply chains, and that will feed inflationary pressures. And if you look at the Hang Seng, look how much is down here on slide three over a 5-year horizon. It's just terrible. And quickly, John, ending my spiel and talk a little bit about inflation. I think it was Rosengreen, the U.S. economist, that said that if you strip out all the subcomponents in the inflation report on Friday that has anything to do with energy or could be driven by energy, so travel, etc. You end up with components that are still on a call. If you take the month on month and you analyze it over the past couple of months, we're still running at more than 4% core inflation in the US if you strip out energy. And the energy and the food situation is probably going to get worse. So I don't know. I don't feel very positive this morning, unfortunately.
No, and I think on the rental side in the US, that's one of those lagging ones relative to house price. And there's probably another 4 to 6 months at least for that to potentially run at pretty aggressive gains or rises in rental rates. Just rewinding briefly, just so for next technical levels, we've mentioned it before, I think, but just want to put these into play because if we are punching through to those new lows below the cycle lows in NASDAQ 100, for example, the 10,589 on the cash index, it's a little bit lower if you look at the continuous futures, but 10,589 is the 61.8% retracement. I think I put it down there on the weekly appendix on the NASDAQ 100. And then the prior major high on the cash index prior to the pandemic outbreak, major high there was 9,736. So those types of levels could be coming into play. And in a relatively hurry, I mean, let's look at where we're, testing towards 13,000. Here we are at 11.5. These things are moving fast. Things do move fast in a bear market. All right, just to review a little bit of what we said at the top of the show here, in terms of the market reaction to those twin data developments there on Friday, you can see on slide 4, I put up the December 22 Eurodollar interest rate future, which I had put up previously as well. And we're marking the Fed for this, at least for this data point, which takes you into early 2023, 40 basis points of further Fed tightening priced in all in one go. You see the two-year ripping to the highest level, two-year U.S. yield ripping to the highest level since 2008. And with that, of course, the whole yield curve lifted, but it was the front end that lifted more aggressively. It's the indication that the Fed is simply just going to have to continue to move and move aggressively until it breaks something. And that could be the economy in all likelihood. And we're seeing, therefore, the yield curve flattening aggressively, very aggressively, as you see on the right-hand chart there on slide 4. We were sort of trading in the 20 to 40 basis positive range there. Some hopes that we would maybe the market could absorb what the Fed has planned for it. But this is crushing it back lower, basically towards zero. And, one wonders for the cycle where this could go. The biggest inversions we've seen were around 50 basis points for the 2-10 yield curve. But if we go back to the 70s, it got into the 250 basis point category. I suspect it's somewhere between those two levels. So that could look like something like a 4% Fed funds rate and a 3.5%. Or sort of 4% 2-year and a 3.5% 10-year, for example, or even higher at the front end. But we'll see where this goes. I think it's a key indicator to track. And you just see this, you're talking about negative sentiment, Peter. I mean, slide 5, Michigan sentiment. Again, this one is way leading and in a very different place than the conference board indicator. I'm really curious to see the next couple months of that one. But this one, record low in the history of this survey. I actually don't know how far back it stretches. So the chart there has it back to the early 1980s. I'll have to have a look on that. But then on the right there, you see on slide 5, the Michigan 5 to 10 year inflation expectations popping above that 3% range. To my mind, it was the first time, but there was 1 month of 3.1%. But that big surge there, highest level, there's only one data point higher than that going all the way back to the mid 90s. So this is serious stuff and a serious stuff for the Fed because it is incorporating this into its very lousy models. And then on the FX front, and we're seeing correlation across markets, you see, of course, the dollar surging here, the combination, the very toxic of tighter Fed, tighter liquidity, and very bad risk sentiment. And you're seeing the dollar stronger across the board. I would suspect in an environment like this that sterling is going to be in for a considerable drubbing. Interesting to see if the Bank of England is forced to go 50 basis points, in part on currency considerations. This week, the market is divided on that. I'll talk more about the preview of the Fed and the BOE and the S&B later. But on slide 6, I've got a cable chart there heading towards the lows there. And 120 is a huge level in cable. You see the dollar surging higher in the FX trend readings. The yen is weak. We did see dollar yen to 135, that massive 20-plus year high. But in the crosses, it's not as weak as it has been. I think maybe a little bit of resilience due to the general across-the-board weak risk sentiment there. And we have to, of course, point out crypto. We don't have any charts here or anything, but it's getting towards a $1 trillion market cap, the entire space, down from almost $3 trillion back in the at the very, very peak there in 2021. Ethereum really just was, I think, one of the key things. There's a huge level around 1700 that gave way just ahead of the weekend, and it's just been absolutely smashed down to well below 1400. And Bitcoin, the next big area, it is took out that little intraday low from earlier this year, I believe it was, and that 19,500 was the major late 2017 peak in Bitcoin. So curious to see, and you know,
John,
yeah,
we have to emphasize that MicroStrategy, which is one of the big holders of Bitcoin, has issued a lot of these convertible bonds quite considerably to leverage their long exposure and bet on the crypto industry, in particular Bitcoin. And the value, the figure in the Bitcoin that is floating around is sort of the point where they would receive a pretty big margin call is around the $21,000. It hasn't really been confirmed. The CFO has said itself that there could be a margin call if the price goes low. Of course, he has to say that it's his fiduciary duty. It's also due to securities laws. We don't know exactly where that figure is, but as soon as we hit that figure, there could be a major seller in crypto. And you and I have talked about it before, John. It's like in equities with or in other markets, but in particular equities, you've seen it so many times. As soon as you have a very big investor with a known position,
it's just so toxic. Forced selling, poor liquidity, and then you have these stable coins, worst named thing ever, in the mix as well. You know, if those are broken, as we saw for a brief episode during one of the recent bouts of Bitcoin selling. So yeah, it's a space to watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's go to let's go to the earnings focus this week. A couple of big names there. You've got your overview on slide 7, Oracle and Adobe, and we've talked a lot about Adobe. I like watching this company as an interesting indicator on valuations and its ability to grow in this environment as well.
Yeah, both Oracle and Adobe, to some extent, a thermostat or a temperature parameter on business spending. So Oracle is on hardcore databases, etc., and business analytics. It's not growing very much, although recently there are signs that they're getting things going in the cloud, but it's not a big bellwether. It's not going to move the technology sector, but Adobe certainly is due to its enormous market value, $200 billion. And as you said, I mean, it has had very rich equity valuations for since it pivoted in around 2012 from sales on a premise model to a SaaS subscription based model. It changed the dynamics, the retention of revenue, the recurring revenue base is just growing and growing. And to me, the way it's valued is a very high duration but also still growing asset. But it if they fail to grow in line with the expectations for the quarter, they could be hit hard at least, and it potentially will show you whether companies are cutting down. And the reason why Adobe is so important is that the software they're selling is for content. It's creative content, and I think that part of business spending from companies is some of the things that you could cut first, because it's related to marketing and selling activities. And there are signs, the recent guidance cut from Snap, et cetera, that are suggesting that companies are cutting down in this area. So I think that's the key risk for going into the Adobe earnings.
Yeah, something like I imagine corporate subscribers are looking through places where they can maybe reduce the number of licenses to reduce their costs. An interesting process to watch there. Let's look at the week ahead in the macro calendar. Very little on the calendar for today. Fed Vice Chair Brainard out speaking today, but it's in the context of some event. And this is the Fed quiet period, so I can't imagine there's any sort of a signal from that. But we have the FOMC meeting up on Wednesday, of course. What does this have in store for us? It's a really critical meeting. They've really, I think, screwed things up by trying to eliminate the 75 basis point idea. Specifically at that May meeting, I really scratched my head. I think their concern at the time was that financial conditions were tightening so viciously, they figured, well, let's push back a little bit and we can give us some time and still continue to indicate steady rate hikes and that the QT is kicking in. So very interesting meeting there to test how they're willing to change their guidance, if at all. The market is marking the Fed at 118 basis points over the next two meetings. So the market is already sort of second guessing the Fed's ability to maintain the simple 50 basis point moves, at least to a degree. So they may indicate a July move that's larger, but let's watch that one, of course. And then we have interesting U.S. data as well. The small business optimism survey tomorrow, the leading housing stuff. So the NAHB survey and the and then all the housing starts, et cetera, later in the week. Two other interesting and really three other interesting central bank meetings this week. So the Bank of England, market divided on whether they go 25 or 50 basis points, as indicated. We know they're barreling towards a cost of living crisis and a recession, but there's also has to consider the risks on the downside that are being aggravated by the weak sterling. The S&B, they've been rattling their cage a bit. Are they willing to go now and actually beat the ECB to a rate hike? It's quite possible. You're seeing some of the analysts beginning to tick over that way. I think it's pretty finely balanced. I think they could go. Also, given their only four times a year meeting schedule, that could be an interesting, obviously, meeting there. And the Bank of Japan, if we're heading into Friday with U.S. yields continuing to gallop higher and dollar yen north of 135, very interesting to see how they, you know, this is just one of those, they're sort of standing on the hill and have planted their flag on this policy. And you can't, it either drops or it sticks. And very interesting, I think, to see how they try to maintain their composure through all of that. So, yeah, lots to look at this week, and especially with the backdrop of a big breakdown in risk sentiment and the risks that we're heading towards new lows, some kind of capitulation. And Peter, we haven't mentioned it yet. Maybe we can bring in a chart in the coming day or two. We have mentioned it on the podcast, but we didn't mention it today. This massive options expiry this week. I believe it's said to be the largest in the history of these sort of triple witching events quarterly.
Yeah, we have promised to find something. So John, we have to dig it up and get it into the podcast tomorrow. It's due date for sure.
that of course increases the risk of when you have these options expires, if there are different strike prices coming into view or coming in and out of view, the gamma exposure and the need to trade simply by marking your position and keeping a certain exposure level to the market. All right. I think we're going to call it a day for today. Let's helmets on out there. Let's really be careful. Let's see how this this looks tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.